Hello, my name is Fergus Sharkey and I'm the Head of Business and Public Sector at SEAI. I'd like to introduce a bonus episode of 180 Degrees from our recent energy show. The SEAI Energy Show is Ireland's leading sustainable energy business event, and this year we hosted it all online. The event offers a unique opportunity to learn about the latest innovations in energy efficiency, renewable energy, and policy developments underpinning Ireland's clean energy transition. We had a fantastic lineup of speakers over the 2 days. One of those was Daniel Murray, a journalist with the Business Post. He chaired the session Pathway to Net Zero, and during this session, he shared some brilliant insights into Ireland's energy transition and what challenges, risks and opportunities it presents for businesses. I hope you enjoy it.
Thanks to the SEAI for inviting me to speak at what is an increasingly important annual event. I've been attending this event now for a few years myself, and I've always found the conference to be extremely useful and a great opportunity to connect with a wide range of expertise in the clean energy sector. It's also great to be taking part in the SEAI's first fully virtual conference, which has been very professionally put together, and best of luck with the rest of it. To introduce myself first, I'm a journalist with the Business Post newspaper, where I focus on energy, environment, and health coverage. My colleagues are some of the best journalists in the country, and week after week, the paper delivers unique news stories and analysis on business, politics, economics, and increasingly on energy and the environment. I was honored to be asked to speak at today's event about the risks to businesses from climate change, but I did have to pause and consider what exactly my credentials were when it came to addressing such a knowledgeable audience. In truth, it's the expertise of so many people listening today that I draw on to fuel my own work. But as I considered what I had learnt in my time covering energy issues for the paper, I realized that my job has given me a unique and a privileged perspective. As a journalist, you have a calling card, meaning people will pick up the phone to you even if sometimes they would prefer not to. As a result, I get to speak to people from all walks of life about how the energy transition and climate change is manifesting in their professional and their personal lives. In any given week, I could be speaking with world-leading climate scientists, policymakers charting a regulatory path to a greener world, or chief executives of companies investing in brand new clean energy technologies. I am regularly speaking with investors and traders analyzing shifting energy markets, and to activists fighting the forces of inertia that have stunted climate action for so many years. I also speak with workers in traditional fossil fuel industries and farmers tending the land, whose livelihoods are now at risk in a zero carbon world. It is my job to listen to these voices carefully, parse out what is true and what is false, and to translate their lived experience into accurate and meaningful business reporting. It's for this reason that I have a unique bird's eye view of the energy transition, and it's from this viewpoint that I'm talking to you today. What I have learned is that despite the critical situation we find ourselves in regarding global warming, there are grounds for hope. At a political level, there is real change happening now, and it finally seems like businesses are beginning to understand the changes they will have to make to decarbonize their activities. The real question now is whether we will be able to do enough, fast enough, to avoid disaster, and the timelines are tight. We're about to embark on the largest energy transition in history. And for the first time, this will be a policy-led transition driven out of a sense of intergenerational and planetary ethics, which is really an incredible milestone. Businesses will be the engines by which our economies will make this transition, and their role is crucial, both because of the economic power that they wield and because of the leadership roles that they occupy. Not acting on climate change poses many risks for businesses, which I will discuss in this talk, but it would be remiss of me to start anywhere other than with the risk to business from climate change itself. Businesses occupy the same physical world that we all do, and as a result, their assets, their employees, their supply chains, and their revenues are vulnerable to the real-world effects of climate change. The precise effect and the range of climate change on any given part of the world is hard to predict due to the variability of climate models. However, it is clear that more extreme weather events, rising sea levels, increased water scarcity, more droughts and wildfires, and unpredictable climate conditions for agriculture will be seen the world over if warming beyond 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius comes to pass. In Ireland, the most dramatic changes are likely to be increased rainfall at certain times of the year, with more inland flooding as a result. Most climate models also project decreased rainfall in the summer for Ireland, resulting in more drought and failed harvests as a consequence, something we have already had experience of in recent years. Then, a projected increase in the number and the intensity of extreme storm events coming in off the Atlantic, combined with rising sea levels, may result in storm surges that cause massive property damage and a complete shift in the value and insurability of properties and businesses around Ireland's coasts. One of Ireland's leading climate scientists, John Sweeney, says we are overdue one of these storm surges, which could leave the insurance industry facing €1 billion in claims. Last year, Irish data company Gamma Location Intelligence created a map showing over 70,000 Irish addresses were at risk of coastal flooding as a result of climate change. Following that paper, I worked with Gamma Intelligence to establish that 10,000 of those properties had been sold recently in the last decade. Although some of these properties may have been bought with cash, it's likely that the vast majority have new debt associated with them, debt that could default if these properties are severely affected by rising sea levels. But even outside of the immediate domestic impact of climate change, Ireland now exists in a globalized economy with complex business supply chains scattered around the world, making many businesses vulnerable to climate impacts in other parts of the world too. The sectors most exposed are those whose work or equipment depends on the stability of climate conditions or any company that finds its operations at the heart of climate change-related extreme weather events. If businesses do not start to take account of the clear physical and litigation risks posed by climate change, increasingly their banks, their investors, and their insurers will. But even if we cannot always make direct links between specific extreme weather events and the value of a company, it must be remembered that businesses operate within the confines of a functioning society, something that has been thrown into sharp relief by the shutting down of our society during this pandemic. If climate change is allowed to take root, then the foundations of many functioning societies around the world will be threatened, as hot weather dries up the ability to produce sufficient food, rising sea levels displace coastal communities, and parts of the world become close to uninhabitable, resulting in mass migration and all of the political and social turmoil that entails. In short, a hothouse world that warms more than 2 degrees Celsius is not one that will provide the kind of agricultural, social, and geopolitical stability that most businesses need to survive and to thrive. To avoid these devastating impacts on humanity, we are embarking on a singular mission, which is to reduce carbon emissions across the globe to net zero. As I said at the beginning, this is the largest energy transition in history, with our economies today relying more on complex energy demand than at any other point in the past. The transformation of our energy systems now appears to be a certainty, with only debates left to be had around the spread of technology, the equity of the transition itself, and the speed at which change will happen. With this energy transition will come a myriad of other risks for businesses. These will include competitive risks, where old technologies will become obsolete and new ones will come to dominate markets. There will be regulatory risks, as companies are compelled to collect, publish, and eventually to reduce their own carbon profile, or as carbon prices are increased, leading to higher energy costs for businesses. There are also financial and investment risks, with lenders having to assess their investments on the basis of commercial exposure to the energy transition and to climate change itself. Certain companies also risk being saddled with stranded fossil fuel assets, whose capital requirements upon construction were vast, but whose value may reduce to zero in a low carbon world. Finally, there will be increasing pressure from various company stakeholders, including shareholders, investors, board members, employees, and consumers. With these new pressures will come the risk of serious reputational damage to any company not doing its share to address its carbon footprint. In many ways, large publicly listed companies and semi-state bodies are already at this point, having been forced initially to disclose their carbon footprints, and now as a result of that transparency and the scrutiny that came with it, many are publishing plans to reduce that footprint over time. As more companies set their own emissions reductions targets, a new era of corporate climate accountability will begin. The first of these transition risks is regulatory, and it's worth considering this first because really it will be the driver of all the other risk categories. The most glaring of all regulatory risks are carbon taxes. The Irish government has committed to raising carbon taxes here to €100 a tonne by 2030, which will have the effect of driving consumers away from fossil fuel products. Alongside these carbon taxes for individuals who purchase fossil fuels, a tightening of carbon trading markets for industry and large energy users will have the same effect of increasing the cost of carbon for big polluters, which will make fossil fuels less attractive over time for manufacturers or energy generators or aviation. These carbon taxes could in time be accompanied by cuts in state subsidies for fossil fuels, further affecting their price and their viability as an energy source for business. If you are a business with already high energy costs or a large transport fleet or an intensive manufacturing process, you are exposed to serious cost increases as a result of these regulatory changes. If you are a business whose products use fossil fuels, such as car manufacturers, then your products risk becoming too expensive to run as a result of rising carbon prices. The intention, of course, is not just to make energy more expensive for business, but to encourage businesses and individuals to switch to cleaner forms of energy. To this end, clean energy subsidies are likely to be sustained and in some cases to be introduced or increased. These can take the form of market premiums for wind and solar generators, payment schemes for microgeneration to encourage homes and businesses alike to install their own solar panels, or possible feed-in tariffs for new clean gases like biogas or hydrogen. On the consumer end, there are already grants to make the greener choice easier, such as grants for electric vehicles, heat pumps, solar installations, or retrofitting buildings. Companies who are early adopters here will benefit from direct state supports, which in time will be removed as uptake reaches a critical mass. Another major regulatory change coming for businesses is around the gathering and the reporting of environmental information. Just last week, the European Commission published a suite of proposals around how certain large companies will have to gather and report environmental data as part of their annual reports. This new Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, which will require the mandatory reporting of non-financial information such as carbon emissions or water usage or waste volumes, and will be extended to all large companies. In time, these requirements are also likely to be extended to even more companies, even medium-sized companies. The gathering and publication of this data will now have to be done according to a new set of uniform reporting standards, and the development of these standards will become a major focus in the coming years. Not only that, but for these companies, assurance of their environmental data by a third party will become mandatory, and this will effectively be like an audit, similar to what is currently done for financial accounts. Separately, the European Commission last week published the text of a proposed law on the taxonomy for sustainable activities. Now, taxonomy is an awful word which understandably puts most people to sleep, but in simple terms, it's a definitive green list for what is considered an environmentally sustainable business activity under EU law. This new green list should lead to more transparency in European financial markets as to what is a sustainable investment and what is not. In short, businesses in Europe and in Ireland soon won't be able to greenwash what they do, but they will have to make real changes to their business if they want to be deemed sustainable. The final thing worth noting in relation to regulatory risks is the setting of carbon reduction targets at a national level. The Irish government has committed to a 51% reduction in carbon emissions by 2030 based on 2018 levels. This will equate to an average of about 7% emissions reductions per year, but exactly how these reductions will be allocated over the next decade will be set out shortly in 2 5-year carbon budgets, which are being decided on by the Climate Change Advisory Council. However, once these overall 5-year carbon budgets have been set out, the government will have to allocate these on a sector-by-sector basis, and this is when things will get very real for business. Increased ambitions are expected across all sectors in the forthcoming Climate Action Plan, which is due to be published by the end of the summer. And businesses will increasingly be expected to spell out how they are falling in line with national efforts and targets. The energy transition risk to business is also a financial one, as banks and investors increasingly do their own due diligence on just how exposed their potential investments are to the energy transition. with policymakers sending every possible signal they can that fossil fuels will be priced out and phased out over time. Business strategies and planned capital investments that don't factor this in over the next 20 to 30 year period will now be considered commercially irresponsible by investors, as well as environmentally irresponsible by everybody else. To this end, investors are becoming increasingly concerned about the risk of investing in stranded assets, where a sudden devaluation of old energy assets in a low carbon world could leave investments exposed. This is resulting in far greater due diligence by investors, making sure their funds are flowing into projects and companies that have viable futures in a low or zero carbon world. With the energy transition posing a real threat to company balance sheets, a new tenet of financial prudence is emerging for investors and banks, which involves the disclosure of financial risks from climate change by debtors or anybody seeking investment. These climate-related financial disclosures involve companies having to disclose the risks to their revenues or their asset values from climate change or from the energy transition. This may involve exposure on energy costs or on potentially stranded assets or competition risks from emerging technologies or physical risks from climate change itself. The International Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures has produced a framework for making these disclosures at a board level. And this framework is now considered the global gold standard, with many countries looking to make these disclosures mandatory for large or listed companies. In just the last few weeks, New Zealand became the first country to introduce legislation to that effect, while our closest neighbour in the UK is also looking at mandating climate-related financial disclosures for large companies. In effect, these disclosures will mean companies have to really assess their financial exposure to climate change and the energy transition, and if exposed, it will compel them to adjust their business strategies accordingly. In time, these disclosures are likely to become the rule of law in many countries, not just to protect individual investors, but because of the implications for the wider stability of the financial system. Just 2 years ago, Philip Lane, who was then governor of the Irish Central Bank and is now chief economist at the European Central Bank, released a paper outlining how climate change and the energy transition represented a material risk to the stability of the Irish financial system. He listed risks such as collapse in value of certain assets in a decarbonized world, markets shifting from old to new technologies, increasing energy costs, and the possibility of sudden policy adjustments if our incremental carbon reductions are not successful. The Central Bank recently told the Business Post that it has established a dedicated climate change unit, where our regulatory framework will be revised to ensure financial providers are managing these climate risks appropriately. It is likely in years to come that we will see climate and energy transition related stress tests carried out on banks and fund managers to ensure the wider financial system isn't becoming unknowingly exposed to these transition risks. These changes at a central bank level will ripple back down the business chain, ultimately resulting in companies having to do greater climate due diligence when seeking finance for their ventures. As well as pressure from investors, businesses will increasingly come under pressure from other stakeholders to ensure their activities are sustainable. In the case of publicly listed companies, this is already happening with activist shareholders who are increasingly using their voting rights to drive climate action at a board level. As our decarbonisation targets become even more embedded over the next 5 to 10 years, companies may also find themselves under pressure from employees. The younger generations are increasingly concerned with the impact of climate change, and companies could suffer from reputational or recruitment issues if they are not in line with the zeitgeist. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, consumers of products and services are becoming more aware of the sustainability of the companies they buy from. As the European Union develops its green labels for truly sustainable business activities, it will become even easier for consumers to identify the companies they want to buy from. This has to date been a powerful driver of climate action, but it also in some cases greenwashing, as businesses try to convince their customers that they're taking their environmental responsibilities seriously. You can barely turn the channel on television nowadays without seeing businesses promoting their green credentials. Whether or not these claims are accurate is a separate debate, but the advertising itself is important because it shows companies have assessed the reputational value of going green and they've decided to invest in it. What's important now is that the majority of those investments go to actual green activities and decarbonisation efforts and not just into green marketing or in some cases greenwashing. It's clear from all of the scenarios that I've outlined above that managing climate risks now makes business sense as well as environmental sense. And the best way of managing those risks is by decarbonizing your operations. That, of course, is easier said than done, and some sectors will find it harder than others, such as heavy industry or freight haulage or the aviation sector. In time, it's hoped that new technologies or maturing technologies will provide some solutions even for these problem industries. Companies in Ireland can now sign up on a voluntary basis to the Low Carbon Pledge, which is a corporate carbon reduction program run by Business in the Community Ireland. Companies signed up to the pledge are assisted in both assessing their carbon footprint, setting decarbonisation targets, and devising plans to achieve them. Every company's carbon footprint is different, with some having large transport needs, others having high energy costs, and others still relying on intensive manufacturing. But organisations like Business in the Community are now available to help every kind of business define and begin their journey to net zero carbon emissions. It's highly likely that the companies we have seen sign up to this low carbon pledge to date will be market leaders in their respective industries when it comes to climate action in a few years' time. The Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures has advised businesses to manage their climate and transition risks through greater climate governance at a board level, integrating climate change into their business strategies, and measuring carbon footprints across their supply chains, and of course, setting clear carbon reduction targets early. Just a few weeks ago, Skillnet Ireland launched a new program where they will train up designated individuals and companies to assess their carbon and energy footprint and plan ways to reduce it. These kind of programs will help businesses ensure they have the relevant expertise internally to reduce any waste of energy and to decarbonize their activities. Environmental consultants are also offering services in this area, so companies don't have to go on this journey alone. Those who do take the initiative to decarbonize early will not only be staying ahead of regulation in this area, but they will have a reputational and competitive advantage in a world that is undergoing a dramatic overhaul of its environmental values. I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen, and I hope some of what I have said is useful. And anybody that wants to contact me afterwards for a chat, please feel free to.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode. We have two seasons available to listen to wherever you get your podcasts. And please subscribe to 180 Degrees for future episodes.